For August 23rd, 2014, we talk about Atari's survival horror reveals, The Yogg, and we do an action-packed free play multiplayer. Welcome to the 72nd level. My name is Cole Ross.
My name is David Weissman.
My name is Dennis Furia. Oh, wait. No, it's not. It's Jala Prendez.
And my name's Ben Merkel.
Yes, and you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Jala, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So tell the nice people what you do.
Well, I paint and draw and write and do all different kinds of stuff. And I've also been listening to Duck Feet for a very long time and forcing myself upon all of you by chit-chatting everywhere.
Yeah, you're a super fan.
Could say that. Patreon backer and all that, Kickstarter backer, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So yeah, we're excited to have you on here. Break up some of the monotony of all the dude voices. Ben raised the point that this is the first sober woman who's been on the show.
Well, you know, I was actually kind of regretting that when Ben was talking about having a beer, and I'm like, well, don't I feel left out?
Do you have beverage available? Do you need to go, Bev?
I could, but that's all right. I'll be sober at least this time. Maybe next time you'll have a treat if I get back on here.
That's funny.
All right, Jala. So you have to represent the opinions of all women on the planet. No pressure.
Oh, yeah, because I'm just, you know, like the definition of all women right here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's all right. We'll see.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't actually know women, but I'm pretty sure they have a hive mind, right?
I've read books.
You've done some learning?
I've read books. It's they are venomous, except their fangs are not, you know, long enough to break the skin. Oh, I'm referring to Daddy Long Legs. Fuck. No.
All right, that's... So do you think they have a Women for Dummies book? Vote yes or no without
it's
looking
called...
up.
Yes.
Ben, it's called this. It's called The Game. It's written by Mystery.
Exactly.
It's about QAs.
Exactly. To it.
Yeah. For as much as I hate the lol, it's a girl humor, that is exactly what you're referring to as The Game.
Well, you know what's funny about that is that I used to work in a bookstore at one point in time, and when I did, there were people who hated that book so much that they literally would take it off the shelf and go hide it somewhere else. And so we'd have to try to figure out where it was, because every once in a while we'd have somebody come in and actually want to buy it, half the time as a joke. And we couldn't find the book because people kept on relocating it and hiding it in places. So
I like to imagine that they left like cryptic clues that required like an advanced knowledge of literature to follow.
Well, you know, with some of the mystery books, we actually had people who would end up leaving clues sometimes and just move stuff around. So
just move it into the children's section,
right?
You know,
where it belongs.
I don't know. So Dennis was unable to join us this week because of baby and such. This is his first week back to work, so he's still trying to get acclimated. I saw them again this weekend, dropping by to pick something up, and I can confirm that his cheeks are indeed squeezable, and so are the baby's.
What? That's how we hang out, you know.
Yeah, just squeezing cheeks. It's cool.
Just cheek squeezing.
Yeah. But what do we have in store for you? Well, why not the usual? We've got the brief. We've got a multiplayer, which is a free play. There are a lot of questions. I don't know if we're going to get through all of them, but we have them. And we're going to round out with some what we have been playing, or the grind, as I often forget to call it. So... let us dive right in.
The brief.
So it's time for the brief, where we talk about things that are happening in the world. Does anybody have a story they would like to volunteer?
Yeah, I have a story.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm sure all of you are, you know, closely following this game, but apparently it's kind of disappointing. The game is Hatterful Boyfriend.
That's the pigeon game, right?
Huh?
That's the pigeon game, right?
Yes. So it is unfortunately been delayed, by which I mean that's my excuse for talking about the fact that there's a game which is a dating sim where you play as a young girl who is new to a high school. However, the twist is that every other member of the high school is a pigeon. So apparently there's, you know, various, all of the various, like, Japanese manga stereotype characters around. So there's, like, biker pigeons and nerd pigeons and, you know, et cetera. So, I don't know, I'm not sure how much more I have to say about this other than I'm kind of glad this exists.
Yeah, I've seen some screenshots pop up on Something Awful, and boy howdy does that look like an entertaining game.
You know, the weird thing about that is it reminds me of this old game that I had on my Apple IIe, the green and black screen. There was like a pigeon game where you played a pigeon and you were supposed to crap on cars, and that's what it was about. Like, you dodged phone poles and buildings and you crapped on cars. That was your goal.
It was Pigeon Simulator?
It was basically Pigeon Simulator, and I don't remember what it was called for the life of me. I've tried to look it up, but I have no idea what it was called.
Yeah, if you're hip to what that game is called, or, you know, just any more information about it, please let us know, because that is easily emulatable. Apple II, yeah. you can straight up rock that. So
see, I find whenever I'm looking for one of these, I find the easiest way to do it is just to type the most bizarre description of the game into Google, and usually that works. So, like, I would type, like, pigeon poop on car game.
And 500 Flash games on Newgrounds come up, right?
What? I actually had one other game that's coming out that I thought looked kind of cool. Have you seen Five Nights at Freddy's?
Yeah, I just about bought that today, actually.
Yeah, that looks really, really creepy. You know, it's basically you're the night watchman at a Chuck E. Cheese's, or as it's called in this, Freddy's, and you know, you man the security cameras and control the doors. However, once it gets dark, all of the robots come to life and proceed to try to kill you.
Yeah. So it's like Chuck E. Cheese's Night Trap.
Right.
Hey, there's actually a Kickstarter to try to revamp and update Night Trap going on right now.
Yeah.
Since you mentioned it.
Wait, what
I
is
saw that
Night
and I'm
Trap?
Like, hmm.
Night Trap is a very infamous Sega CD FMV game.
Okay.
That stars the late Dana Plato, I believe, from The Facts of Life. And what's happening is these girls are having a slumber party, and you are a person who is manning the security cameras, and this is a trapped mansion, and there are intruders who are seeking to kill them. It was the subject of legislative controversy in the mid-90s, along with, like, Mortal Kombat, except it is just a goofy and bad game that happens to feature some young girls singing into brushes as though they were microphones.
As young girls do. Jala, as representing all women ever, can you comment on singing into brushes?
I can never remember a time that I have ever sung into a brush. I would sing my steering wheel, but when driving, but that's about it. I can't really think that of a time that I actually pretended that was a microphone. Sorry to disappoint.
Yeah. Well, I mean, presumably that's what the congressional hearings were over. I mean, that's blatantly inaccurate.
Yeah.
Apparently.
I sang into my shower head as though it were a microphone stand. However, I almost drowned. And that was the subject of a lengthy investigation because I didn't want to admit.
What song were you singing, Cole?
Some Nights by Fun.
All right.
No, it was.
Purple Rain.
Chocolate Ray. Sorry.
Oh, man. So all I can see is Polly the Pigeon. So that might be a Polly, based on David's heuristic of just write the thing. Maybe. Yeah, I have no idea. Huh.
I think my favorite for that game is this was like back in high school. We were trying to find the game like Super Monkey Ball or whatever.
Yeah,
and someone typed in on like Google, like, I think fairly word for word, that stupid monkey game.
Mm-hmm.
So Super Monkey Ball is a game that Konami could not add an S to and have it be okay.
Wait, what is there some sort of S adding thing, or are we just saying in general that would look bad?
Testicles, David.
No, I got that.
Well, it's kind of like Silent Hills.
Why would they do this?
Silent Hills.
Oh, okay. I've got the.
Huh. Wait a minute. So they're making it an HD. I'm moving on to your story, Jala. So I don't even know if this is your story, but they're making it an HD. So is it upscaling, uppressing it? I don't.
That's my impression, and that wasn't my story, but that was something that I happened to find when I was looking for a story. So
yeah. Well, what is your story?
Well, I have two little tidbits. One of which is really a short thing. I will pop it in the little robot here for you guys to look at. I have a lot of fun playing Toy Soldiers, which is an older RTS strategy type thing. And they are making Toy Soldiers War Chest, which is coming out next spring. And basically you have four different armies, including the original guys from the first Toy Soldiers. And then also there's one with fairies and stuff. And like the leader's name is Starbright. And like there's teddy bears and stuff like that. And it's basically like this little cutesy toy box war game. And it's a lot of fun. So anyway, I was kind of excited about that. It's real short and sweet. The other one that's actually a little bit more entertaining, this should at least entertain David, if nobody else, is that in Guild Wars 2, I found out today that they are occupying Radasum, which is the city of the little like Stitch people. And they're occupying it to bring back Super Adventure Box, which is this 8-bit game that they put inside of the game. It's like a mini game or a dungeon that you can go through and play by yourself or with other people, and it's kind of a riff off of like all Nintendo ever.
Yeah.
And so it has its own special music, its own special graphics and stuff. And so it was actually introduced originally in April of last year for April Fools, and then it came back in September. It has not shown back up since, although they left like the portal there inactive. And so there's people literally just hanging out in Radasum and, like, you know, putting all these protest messages up on Twitter and stuff right now. And so that was kind of ridiculous, and I thought that was kind of entertaining.
That's actually a pretty good strategy to keep people coming back, because, like, if you just bring this thing back at random and it gets people to, like, oh, gosh, it's back, and then it causes a rush, you could actually, like, juice your numbers by deploying that, right?
Oh, yeah, I mean... Yeah. I know with some of the holiday events, stuff like that happens. The big one I know is that, like, Kingdom of Loathing, pretty much every year for Christmas, it's like, all right, guys, we added, like, 5 billion new servers, so hopefully it won't crash this time.
Yeah, well, you know that it's an MMO. They're, of course, going to bring back anything they've made assets for, so it's not like it's a surprise. Of course, they're going to release it sometime near future. I mean, maybe this weekend, even, for all I know. But still, it's kind of funny that there's an Occupy movement on the game. I mean, I'm sure it happened somewhere else first, but this is the first time it's actually been in a game I play.
Yeah,
I remember in... I remember there was some in World of Warcraft. I think the Paladins were irate. So what they did is just all gathered in Ironforge and used the sit-down emote at exactly the same time, and all the animation apparently crashed the server.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. I wonder what else would be worth protesting in an MMO, because the only other thing that I see people like really get passionate about is you know, just like nerfs and stuff, like that Paladin thing you mentioned.
I remember one some change up the PvP system. That was something that World of Warcraft did, in terms of like basically killing off world PvP by adding dishonorable kills. And the other one I know of is City of Heroes had a patch where they just did a across-the-board nerf. They basically basically what they did is change the way that scaling against enemies that are stronger than you works, so that it in effect made everyone dramatically weaker.
See, I only play Guild Wars 2 for MMOs, but the thing about it is I can only remember in that game Pink Day in LA, or Lion's Arch, which basically was a fundraiser that was done where everybody was using pink dyes and dyeing their characters pink for breast cancer awareness, and then they were also donating, and there was like a fundraiser and giveaways and stuff like that run by a big guild. So that was not an Occupy movement, but it was something that was awesome that was done anyway. And I think they actually, at least for a while, they were doing it annually. So
I like that. I like that more than we are entitled to thing. Let us pitch fit about thing. Huh.
Yep.
Neat. I'll go. I've got one that I'm kind of excited about. I linked to this on the Hexcrank Facebook page, but the more people listen to this, then look at that. So Atari is reviving some of its old survival horror, let's say, properties, franchises, bizarrely. So this just kind of showed up, and it's like, what? So they're releasing a new game under the title Haunted House.
Okay.
So yeah, Haunted House was kind of one of the first proto survival horror games. It was done on the 2600. It's pretty good, actually. It's like a fun, you know, kind of tense game to play, especially on the higher difficulty levels. But like the bizarre thing, this is the fourth Haunted House game, the one that's going to be coming out, because apparently there was one like they did a remake of it in 2010, which I didn't know about. Actually, you know what? That's a lie, because Bob Mackey told me about that. Shortly after I did the one episode or the one article. So that is a lie. But there's also like an iOS one. And then this one is being developed by the same developers who did Anna. Dream Painters. Yeah. Anna, which is a really nifty, like atmospheric and moody, like physics based survival horror puzzle kind of thing. I think it was published by Calypso. It's pretty neat. Yeah, so I'm excited about this just because that's a cool developer. I don't know what they're going to do with Haunted House that will make it any, you know, I don't know what makes this specifically Haunted House-y, but I don't know. It kind of seems like there's more horror stuff in the news, which is always good to see.
I was just going to say another one that was popping up there was Alone in the Dark. What are you going to do, Paul?
Alone in the Dark, that is another one. That's the other thing in this article that I'm looking at, which it has kind of a dumb title, Alone in the Dark Illumination. which I've never seen a title so effectively cancel itself out. Like, and then for the HD remake, it's going to be Alone in the Dark Illumination and a Buddy.
Silent Hill loudspeaker.
Silent Hill sick jams.
To be fair, the alternative name was A Loner in the Dark.
Silent Hill sick jams, don't touch that dial, it's got jam on it. Wiggity.
I have to say, I hope wherever they do, I hope they have retain the same awesome, like Dali-esque cover art from the original Haunted House.
Yeah, it's pretty good. That's what made it stick out. I was browsing on the Polygon, and I saw, like, oh, that's that cool cover art. Yeah, I don't know. I'm excited about this. I don't know how much more there is to say about it, but
you have another entry for the clog now.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, or for Hexcrank anyway, which, well, I'll get to that on what I've been playing. I'll get to that in the grind. I'm pretty excited about that. In addition to, like, did we talk about the Resident Evil remake that they're doing?
I don't think so.
No.
Yeah, so they're doing an updated re-release of the Resident Evil remake from the GameCube.
The re-release?
Yeah, Resident Evil. Yeah. Well, considering that, like, Resident Evil, that remake is one of my favorite games ever, like, give me more, sign it up, like, let's you know, fling this light into the future, you know.
Huh. So would this be like Resident Evil Even More Crows edition?
Yes, all crows. man. Yeah. That plus Silent Hill, it's very survival horror-y.
Yeah, I'm just hoping I'm hoping that the next Resident Evil 7 is going to be awesome. I really have a feeling it's not going to be what I like, because I feel like there's a distinct difference between what the fans of the series want and what I want.
Yeah,
pretty much. From what I've read, there's rumor of it actually tying into the movies, although that's not confirmed, but they do have a statement. Awesome. Well, they also have a statement from Capcom saying that they're going to be trying to take it back to its roots and make it more survival horror-y rather than what Resident Evil 6 is, where it's like, okay, the only way they can top this is by zombies in space. And because after the end of what happened in that, there's nowhere else they can go to top what they did. It's basically every single 80s action movie you can think of, like the crescendo of every one of them crammed into Resident Evil. Like, what could be something completely improbable that we can throw in here that's really neat?
Yeah.
Chris can start uppercutting asteroids now.
Basically.
Well, I mean, we also saw how well going to space worked out for Dino Crisis. actual thing, Dino Crisis 3, look it up.
Wasn't that always more or less the plot of Dino Crisis?
No. It was basically Jurassic Park.
Was it always like sci-fi except dinosaurs?
Well, I mean, yeah, it was sci-fi dinosaurs. I mean, it was basically the Jurassic Park game everybody wanted, except with a redheaded lady instead of Laura Dern. Although I would have taken Laura Dern. I like that going back to the roots thing, because that is the thing that people seem to either talk about the most or speak about the most fondly when they were talking about Resident Evil 6, right? Like Leon's campaign, which is a little bit of a return to form, was the thing that kind of like lit up people's attention.
Yeah, I guess for me, and this is sort of bleeding over what I've been playing, but my grind, but I guess for me, there's a crap ton of zombie games and I don't feel like the world needs another one, and there's a crap ton of survival horror games and I don't feel like the world really needs another one. Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like what's interesting to me about the Resident Evil is kind of the zombies and monsters as military weapons angle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I feel like not necessarily that I want it to be like ultra actiony, but I think what it has that's unique is kind of the BSAA, these are actual weapons as opposed to just zombie apocalypse monsters.
I'm curious. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that's actually something that I think too. When you look at the slew of different survival horror games that are out there, and survival horror esque, because Resident Evil hasn't been survival horror for a while now,
for a decade.
Yeah, but anyway, the thing about it that sets it apart is the fact that it is bioterrorism, and they could really do something like with that to push it into an interesting different direction. But the problem is that so many people, because they grew up with the older Resident Evil games that are survival horror, that's what all the fans are craving. Although for me personally, I like the fact that in Resident Evil 6, they have the mercenary Jake. They have, the BSAA going on. They still have the, Leon's campaign, and he's doing his, callback to the original games and all of that. I like the fact that they do all of these different things and weave them into one larger story. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with the next one. So
yeah, I guess I'm curious where the notion that there are too many survival horror games comes from.
Personally at all.
No, I'm not taking it personally. I'm just wondering if it's because I talk to you about games a lot and they tend to be the only things I talk about.
I was kind of being facetious, exaggerating. I guess to me, I feel like It's more what I mean is that I feel like just making another survival horror game on its own isn't particularly original. It's not to this degree, but kind of similar to making another like sci-fi first-person shooter. It's been done. Whereas I feel like the bioterrorism thing is original. And I would say, like, I would, other than the fact that I really like Jake and want that character to come back, I would say, like, I'd be fine with it being survival horror, but with the plot line being very strongly, you know, a militaristic, you know, bioterrorism thing. It's more just, I feel like that going back to survival horror, I feel like would almost, would probably mean abandoning that storyline.
So a possible solution to this, and what I think might be interesting, is if they broke the series in two. It's a little bit like what they were talking, like what they tried to do with Operation Raccoon City, right? Where that was just a straight up action game. Like, I could see that, you know, if they were trying to explore those two different things, that would almost be the way that you have to do it. So that, you know, the Code Veronicas can have their Code Veronicas and your outbreaks can have your outbreaks, you know?
Right. And I feel like that could even be stronger because, I mean, then, you know, there are, you know, the kind of what they do in six, where there are kind of the two sides of the story. You know, there's Chris's campaign where you're, you know, where it's kind of the macro scale and you're just shooting everything that moves. And then you have Leon's campaign. Like, I feel like you could even tell the overall story better by doing that.
Yeah. So I guess where I stand on it, you know, just the, and part of the reason why I raised that question, why do you feel that there's too many? I think that traditional survival horror is actually due for like a little bit of a return, but by which I don't mean like, let's take the tank controls and the crazy puzzles and bring it back. But like, what would happen if we doubled down on the spookiness and the isolation, you know, just made something that felt like those old ones, in all the best ways while kind of taking the edges away. Right.
Sure. I guess I agree. And maybe this is unfair to me to a certain degree. When I hear that, it seems like innately what that means, though, is bring back the clunkiness. Like, I realize it shouldn't be that way, but it seems to me like observing fans, fans tend to, not all of them, obviously not yourself, but often tend to be irrational. And so it seems like, yeah, I see things where it's like, yo.
Yeah. Well, and then it also becomes, is it clunkiness or is it at a more methodical pace, or is it, you know, leaning more on atmosphere and exploration over, you know, gore and guts? It's Dead Space versus Dead Space 2.
Right. Yeah.
I think he should play Among the Sleep.
Yeah. I mean, in general, if you're listening, play Among the Sleep. It's really good.
Except for Dennis. Dennis doesn't need to play that. I was actually playing that game, and when I was going through it and beating it, I was like, oh, God, Dennis does not need to play this ever. Like, at least not for a long time until his kid is older. Because you play a two-year-old, and it's a survival horror game for your two-year-old. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
But I mean, he should play it with his kid. Yeah.
But I think it's great, though, because it explores the question of, What can a little kid be having nightmares about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that answer, you know, that question is answered throughout the course of the game, and I really, really think it sticks the landing on that. But we've camped out on this for a little while. Ben, do you have a story?
I have two stories.
You have two stories.
I have two stories. I'm like a downtown building in a small town. Whatever. All right.
What?
So the first. I don't know. The first link is a follow-up to a story that we did previously talking about the PlayStation 4 SharePlay.
As a side apparent, you can't see anyone's links.
Yeah, sorry. I've got you on the other computer. I'll add you to the chat. Don't worry.
Uh-huh. Okay. So as a follow-up to a story we did earlier, it's about the PlayStation 4 SharePlay. So apparently it's only going to be available for 60 minutes at a time, which is kind of a bummer.
Little bit,
but I suppose maybe what that's getting around is like maybe if like one friend was like, here, you can play this game, and just like leaves their system on while the other person can just straight up play it. Maybe it's trying to safeguard against that, perhaps. But I don't know. That's kind of a bummer, because that was a feature that seemed kind of cool. But maybe it'll still be cool. But, you know, whatever.
Well, all that does is just give you enough of a taste. You're like, okay, I got a little bit settled in, and now, oh, it time's up.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it cements it as a marketing tool as opposed to, like, a genuine feature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, I guess the to play devil's advocate, because I'm not going to complete that sentence successfully.
Abort.
To play devil's advocate, I feel like, you know, one of the big problems, and I feel like that kind of perpetuates some of the wait till it's on sale / buy it used thing, is the fact that there's so many games that look awesome and then turn out to be crap. So I feel like maybe this is a way to kind of be like demos 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that respect, I think it could be in the best interest of the consumer, even if it is advertising.
Yeah, I mean, it does make it harder for games to sell you a bad product with this, I suppose, because you're looking at an arbitrary 60-minute segment, too. You're not looking at their E3 demo, you know.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully that'll push for increasing quality of games.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, just shed some light on it. And especially like that can create a good moment, putting on my marketer hat for a second here, you know, which is like something that would convince me to buy a game is a friend saying, holy shit, come in here, co-op with me for a second and check this thing out, or, you know, play this one mission or whatever, like having a guide. So what this does is, and I'm going to use a crazy buzzword here, is it systematizes evangelism.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But which I mean, it gives you the opportunity and ability to just like straight up reach out to somebody and say, hey, we should play this thing together. We might only have an hour, but who has that kind of attention span anyway?
Yeah, time.
I will admit I would be much more inclined to play Dark Souls had I had a Sherpa like you to, you know. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I have some bitterness about Dark Souls. I pulled it up because I had been waiting to play it because I just needed to have a chunk of time that I could sit down and devote to playing it.
Yeah.
But still, I was going to try it. And then I opened up Steam, I pulled it up, and then Games for Windows Live doesn't work right. And no matter how many different fixes I tried to pull up in Steam for them, I couldn't get it to work. And so I can't save. So I got to go in there and derp around a little bit, but that's as far as I got. I couldn't get anywhere else, and I can't save the game, so there's not really much point in me doing much. I'm not going to get anywhere. So.
Yeah, that sucks. I haven't tried playing it since they shut down Games for Windows Live. I thought that they were keeping it open. I thought that it was going to stick around for legacy titles.
Well, that's what it's like. The forums, it's kind of seems like it's kind of half and half, where some people it's working for and then other people it's not. And then one of the fixes was to download the Windows Marketplace thing and then open it through that and blah, blah, blah. I've tried all these different fixes and they're not working. Whatever was recommended in the Steam forum. And granted, I didn't delve very deep because I'm like, okay, I can just move on and play something else because this is not working. But yeah, I was kind of sad about that because I was going to give it a shot finally. And
hopefully it'll be patched.
Hopefully.
To be fair, this is, you know, Microsoft, therefore they innately do everything wrong. So
only half the time.
Yeah.
Half the time it works all the time.
Exactly, yeah.
You said you had two, Ben. What else you got?
I do. The other one's something super short. It's just that Reddit made an app for Xbox One, so that's kind of cool. So that's it. There's nothing more that needs to be discussed about that.
So people can go in there and complain about Zoe Quinn while they get their headshots in.
Yeah. They can waste time while they're wasting time.
Yeah.
Who the heck is never?
Yeah, and it's a story I don't want to talk about on the air, actually, because it makes me real angry.
Can of worms.
Yes, it is.
How do you feel about Ajala?
I feel nothing.
Oh, right. That's a real problem, man.
Just in general.
Multiplayer.
It is time for the multiplayer section, where we normally ask you questions, but this time, well, we put it to you to ask us the questions in a free play round. Dennis was kind enough to put that out there. And boy, did you guys come out in force. We've got plenty of questions to ask and answer ourselves. Like, you can't hear that. It's, you know, audio, so we have to read them. So we're kind of asking. I'll just go on. So Tim writes in asking, do you guys have any brothers or sisters? Do you have any favorite gaming memories with your siblings?
I'll throw out one. It's so me and my brother lived in different places when, like, I was in high school. Like, he lived with my dad, I lived with my mom, sort of thing. But he was always a big proponent of the Xbox when the initial Xbox came out. And then on top of that, he was a big proponent of Knights of the Old Republic before it came out. Like, he was like, oh, yeah, this is going to be a really good game or whatever. So I played that a whole bunch in his bedroom whenever I would go to visit them. And, yeah, that's a fond memory.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Good.
I have one sister, and she is older than me. And we used to play Nintendo together, and we used to do stuff like play the arcade beat-em-ups, like Turtles and stuff like that, and beat those games. She actually was also the person who introduced me to RPGs with Shining Force, which was my first, and that's really a strategy RPG, but that was my first RPG, and actually the first game that she let me alone long enough to actually beat the game on my own without, you know, coming in and invading the, you know, game system. So
yeah, nice first RPG. That is a good one. Looking at this here, yeah, so I have an older brother, as people know from shows on the network. Sorry, I got distracted there with the work thing. mid-sentence. Yeah, so for a while there, he worked at the Babbage's in town. It would become the GameStop that I worked at. Yes, I was a legacy.
Nepotism.
Yeah. And he would bring home Dreamcast games because of the checkout policy. So I was playing free game rentals and selling people used games long before the 8 years that I worked at GameStop. Sorry, unnamed video game retailer.
You don't work there anymore.
I know, but it's you know, the weight of tradition, Ben. All right. So I remember the Christmas that I got the Dreamcast, or maybe a year after the Christmas I got the Dreamcast or whatever, playing Seaman with my brother, like down in the basement. Like, we had a little air mattress, and it was kind of like, oh, we're going to camp out down in the basement and play Seaman. And it was great. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, right. That's fine. It's like... There's so many other game titles that would be less whatever.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Like, also, like, you know, NFL 2K1, that was a pretty good one to play, you know? Yeah. And then I have a younger half-sister, and every Christmas we play a boatload of Wii bowling over there at my dad's with my family. Nice. And stuff. Yeah. So it's funny how that is being kept alive nearly a decade later. You're wondering who still is playing the Wii? It is families who play Wii bowling at Christmas.
So has anyone in the Ross family gotten a 300 on it?
I don't know about a 300. My dad's pretty boss at it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that accent you just affected.
Pretty boss at
Mansfield, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I slip into and out of accents sometimes. Ever since I started watching The Wire, I sometimes get a little bit of an urban affect.
But Baltimore accent?
Yeah, but Balmer. Please.
Yeah. No. Yeah, sorry.
Heron. No. but I've always had a little bit of that. Yeah, no, that was good. My dad put he put the Wii remote through the ceiling once, which was pretty funny. Yeah.
He's hardcore, man.
Yeah, well, he forgot to put the strap on. Yeah. And David, you are an only child, is that correct?
Yes, I'm an only child, so I have no fond memories of playing with family and my life. Probably my closest equivalent, I did a lot of, like, I'm sure everyone did this, but a lot of going over to friends' houses. Yeah. And playing games. Our two big ones were the original Super Smash Bros. We did just a ton of that, and then we did a ton of Gauntlet Legends.
Oh, yeah.
So, other than that, not too much.
Yeah. Hmm. Ben, what's Dustin ask?
Dustin asks, scramble, scramble, scramble. Guilty Gaming, where, when, how, why have you gamed when you weren't supposed to be? Turn the lights down low for this question.
Duck beat after duck. Oh, yeah, the midnight storm. Yeah, no, so I'll go all the time nowadays, actually. Well, okay, so
I should be working right now.
Well, so here's the crazy thing about my job. It never starts and it never stops.
Yeah, that's not good.
So like I just always have stuff on a list and I could always be working on it, and sometimes during the middle of the day it'll be like, well, I've got 15 minutes and nothing to do until this next meeting. I could either like go around and talk, which I often do, or I'll just fire a Crypt of the Necro Dancer, which happens all the time around my office. At any given time in my office, a third of the people are playing Minecraft.
There are always like five people necro dancing.
Yeah, just crazy, just doing little jigs. Yeah, I'll fire up FTL or something. You know, if there's nothing else to do. Yeah, I guess in a more traditional sense, when you know somebody has a job, you know, in terms of jobs that actually have a starting and stopping point. My first like real job as a teenager was working under the table for a popcorn vendor in our local mall, like being paid under the table, like I was off the books.
I know. Yeah. I was imagining it more literally than that, just for fun.
Floors get messy, Ben. So I was, you know, just standing at this popcorn cart selling boxes of popcorn for 50 cents, getting paid $6 an hour under the table. And there would be slow periods. And so I just had my Game Boy Advance SP and I would just whip out Super Mario Brothers Advance 3 or whatever it was, just play a level of that and then put it back whenever somebody came up. Okay, so this is guilty. I'm not guilty about any of this. I don't feel bad. I feel no remorse.
See, I feel guilt a lot of times because I work a job, but then I also do painting, comics, and other stuff like that. And so because I'm kind of trying to transition from one job into the other, I'm constantly busy with art things when I'm not, catching a nap or working at the day job. So actually today, getting ready for the podcast and recording the podcast, I'm actually supposed to be doing my comic right now, but that's okay. I'll be finishing that up afterwards. But I did actually fire up a game a little bit earlier to play a little bit more of it, which I will talk about in the grind. So yeah, I can't really say that on a normal job, being employed for someone else, that I've had that happen. But there are days that I'm just like, you know what? Screw everything. I don't care if I have this list of things to do. I'm playing a game. And I will just shut down and do nothing but play a game all day.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
It doesn't happen very often, but when it does, I'm serious about it.
That's great.
I think for me, the big one I think of, and they are fond memories, are TI-86 games in high school. Those things were pretty epic. What was it? Phoenix, which was like the, not Space Invaders.
It was like Galaga.
Yeah. And that was freaking awesome. The flamethrower was maybe the coolest weapon. And Mario.
Yep. Mario with the level editor, like actually making.
That was funny because like it actually wasn't that great of a game. Like it was, unless you were just like an asshole and filled the entire stage with cannons, it was like trivial to beat to beat anything. But the level editor just made the whole thing.
Definitely, it's more of an engineering feat than a good game.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, if we want to make level t-shirts, we should have one with David's quote, "Mario, it's not that good of a game."
Oh, man.
So you want me to be tar and feather.
Over the internet, yes.
Okay, new app idea, E-tar. E-tar and iFeather. yeah, I remember hopping up on that Drug Wars tip.
Yes. Mm.
Yeah, that was a fun game.
That was one of those games. I wish I could, like, track down the source code, simply because, like, I'm interested in, like, how some of the mechanics actually worked. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's a pretty simple game. I mean...
Yeah, but just, like, there are a lot of just some of the random events and stuff. Like, I always wondered, like, you know, kind of what those were under the hood.
Yeah, yeah.
See the full extent of the racism in the game?
Yeah. See, I wasn't sensitive to those things yet, so I have no recollection of the racism. Oh, and the Tetris Attack clone. Actually, it was really good on TI-83.
What's Tetris Attack versus regular?
It's the one where the tiles rise up, and then you have to switch them in order to make combos.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
That one was fun.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, so I don't really have much of that. But I think the closest thing I could get to is I did play... what's the one Rockstar game where you, like, just murder people the entire time?
Manhunt?
Yeah, played that game.
Every Rockstar game?
Yeah, this one was particularly vicious, where the point of it was to murder them in gruesome ways. Like, the mechanics reinforced that idea. It wasn't a terrible game, but it was novel, and it was pretty original. But
is that the snuff film game?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like Running Man.
Yeah. The first one wasn't bad. It wasn't... Yeah, I mean, it was interesting. Yeah. But anyway, we played that at my friend's house, like, after his parents went to sleep. Because I don't know. We were in early high school, so I don't know. Yeah. Whatever.
Transgressions. Jala, what's David say?
David says, Fable Legends Evolve and now BioWare has announced Shadow Realms, 3 games of 4 players versus a player boss DM. Do you think this style will take off or flop? I'm personally interested, but wonder how they will balance the game to be fair and fun for both sides.
So it's funny that all these major studios are doing this, because my first inkling that this kind of game existed was Crawl, which is a game that's about to come out or is now out on Steam, which is like a 2D roguelike, except one person is playing kind of the dungeon master or the monsters. And it's kind of like everybody's trying to make progress, and then whoever kills the monster gets to be the monster next, something like that. So you're like swapping around. As far as the DM goes, I don't know. I'm leery of any experience that requires 4 people at any given time to be successful. And I don't know that I trust any of these games to like simulate that with a less than full party, you know?
Yeah. That tends to be a problem with games where, you know, it involves a group of people. That gets complicated. and then, like, AI to actually be capable of simulating.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like the problem I've seen most is you need to... It's not good enough to program an AI to say, like, in Left 4 Dead, it's not good enough to program the AI to be good at first-person shooters. You need to program the AI to know how to play Left 4 Dead. Right. So, like, I remember in Left 4 Dead, the AI is not smart enough, to avoid the witch.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, most of the players aren't either, so...
Well, true, but, like, I remember there would be places where, like, we had, like, snuck past the witch, and then as soon as the AI sees the witch, it starts firing.
Yeah. Just indiscriminately.
Awesome.
Yeah. Way to go, bro.
It shoots you.
No, David, that was Conrad. Conrad intentionally shot everything.
Okay, maybe. Maybe humans were the problem.
Check it out. I can kill her and win. Oh, no, I can't. I don't know.
I'm actually really excited about Evolve. So there's at least one of these I'm really excited about. I don't know. They've been doing it for a while, though, if you count, like, some of the Steam mods where, like, one person plays as the Invisible Mutant and everyone hunts them down, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I sort of agree with what David's talking about the balance. It seems for me, particularly on some of the more, like, RPG-esque games such as Dark Souls, or even ones like Left 4 Dead. What just strikes me as not appealing about it is the gameplay is based around griefing, basically. I guess what I'm saying is it seems like the gameplay is based around the most negative aspects of the game system. In terms of it's like, you know, how can I stun lock people, or, you know, how can I, you know... Yeah, you know, it's just the it seems like these sorts of PvP almost always end up winning is based around exploiting the least fun parts of the game.
See, what's funny is, like, I think that that's the funniest part of games, or the most enjoyable.
In terms of...
I don't know, just be like, I guess, if you can systematize being a dick to somebody and having that be a good time for everybody, then that is something that I enjoy. See also New Super Mario Brothers.
I think this is gonna segue into my answer, where Mario Party did this like years and years ago, you know, with the 3-on-1 games, you know. So like it definitely can be done, I think, and it can be fun too. It's definitely an issue of balance though. Like, yeah, I mean that's the challenge for the developers. It's making sure that it's not, you know, that it's perfectly balanced between the two.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Sure. Actually, one other thing. I think one thing that'll be interesting that they'll have to overcome is, you know, when you're in a multiplayer game, there's a sort of collective intelligence, whereas one player starts doing something and that's the catalyst for other players doing something, whereas I could see it becoming a thing where the person playing the one character just ends up kind of struggling to know what they should do simply because there's no collective lead to follow. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. But also playing the person with just one side of his equation, or, you know, just like I'm the only person on this team doing this, I can feel better because nobody's going to yell at me for doing the wrong thing. That collective intelligence just kind of leads to codified knowledge and people just calling you nasty words over chat because obviously you don't go that way, you stupid blank blank or whatever. Uh-huh. You know,
like, sorry, cool.
It's just what happens, you know?
I've actually never had that happen, or virtually never.
Well, then again, I also play with just friends, people that I know, so I never have that problem.
I play with friends, but I have terrible friends, so that happens to me.
Right?
I guess I'm thinking of, in particular, you know, the way I often feel like games like the Battlefield series, is like the game is so big that I don't know what to do. You know, I don't know how to intelligently engage. Therefore, I end up just like hiding behind cover the whole time.
Mm.
If that makes sense. Well, I feel like it's not so much even like the actual doing the right thing so much as it is catalyzing doing anything.
Mm.
But no, I definitely hear what you're saying. Definitely. I could see this being kind of a cool thing where certain types of players I would never want to be the one person. That just doesn't appeal to me. And I could see it being a cool thing where some players like playing that role and some players don't. And it's sort of mutually beneficial killing each other.
Yeah. My opinion on multiplayer things should not matter because recall the anecdote where I got somebody to rage quit Portal 2.
I was thinking of the exact same memory.
That sounds. Is there an achievement for that?
You would think that that's like the place for the most patient problem solvers, you know?
No, dude was an asshole.
Yeah, I will be honest. Like you unfortunately get a lot of that in Payday, actually.
Mm. Yeah. I'll read Dan's because it's kind of long. I can skirt right through it. So, literature and games. I'm not sure of Gary, Cole, or others, but occasionally there's a mention of literature when discussing games, like this game level or world reminds me of this book I read, for example. I would love for Duckfeed to do a literature podcast or blog. I like your taste in games. Maybe I will like your taste in literature as it relates to games. Going on, I appreciate the work. Also, I was listening to another podcast, and the host referred you guys as a bunch of elitists, like as a slur, lol. If anybody knows what show that is, like if somebody trying to start beef, like let me know. Tip me off.
We should read your comment of which show is talking shit.
I'm honestly I'm interested to know like where that comes from truly, because I don't know, that's not something I necessarily perceive us to be. Yeah. Although I a little bit wonder, at least for me, like I very explicitly, my commentary are not reviews. They are me like spouting off my opinions.
Yeah.
So like, I could very much see if someone took what I said and took it as like intending to be an at all informed decision, mm-hmm. why that would maybe come across as elitist, because it's very much just me saying I'm right for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah. So the thing that I've heard and seen in comments and stuff, and I'm not going to be defensive because this is the one thing that somebody will say about you that you can't refute it. If somebody right. says it, they believe it, and there's nothing you can say that'll change it. In fact, the better argument you form against it, the more you confirm what they're saying. Sure. I've had to deal with being called an elitist a lot. I don't know if it's just the way I present myself or whatever. I don't know. I think the one thing that we're guilty of is focusing on narrative based games at the expense of things that are more mechanically intricate, like fighting games, or like, you know, like sometimes we talk shit about shooters and stuff like that. You know, maybe people don't know that we're kind of joking, or I'm not sure, but good.
If this is a way to start a podcast rivalry, I'm all for it, because I think that would be hilarious.
Yeah, let's get some beef going. just tell me who it is.
Yeah, because you know, like in hip hop, they have like, you know, the diss songs. We could have like diss podcasts.
I'm only kind of joking. I like the idea of joke podcast beef, but if there's somebody talking shit, I kind of like to know. You know, you don't punch down, you punch up.
You uppercut boulders.
Unless you're playing Street Fighter, in which case you punch down all the time and just try to get the other person.
No, you quarter circle forward punch. So he continues going on talking about video game novelizations, such as the books of The Witcher, also the Dragon Age books and the Resident Evil novels, which are crap. So I'm going to imply two questions here that Dan is asking us. Number one, are you guys elitist? No. Number one, what is on your reading list currently? And number two, have you read a good video game novelization? And I only ask that because I do have an answer.
Okay, what's your answer?
David wants to go.
Entertaining video game novelizations. I enjoyed some of the StarCraft ones. And I felt like that some of them had some interesting kind of tweaks on the storyline or lore. None of them that I've read, at least, have been literature or, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they're fun. You know.
Yeah. Are you reading anything right now?
No, I just got done with Three Musketeers and actually haven't picked up anything. I'm trying to read like some of the more classic books, but whatever. I've got a book that actually the pastor at one of the local churches published that's just like a basic like Christian book, but in terms of like actually, you know, deep in reading, not right now. I'm kind of in between books. So if anyone has a suggestion.
Yeah. Hit us up. Jala, how about you? Either question. Or both.
Well, let's see. First off, let me say that I read so voraciously as a child because I basically was raised in a library and then I worked in a bookstore. So I kind of read everything in the world. That being said, I would pointedly avoid certain things, and game novelizations were one of those things I pointedly avoided, with the exception of stuff like comic adaptations of games. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like I would read, you know, like the Metal Gear one, and the Castlevania one was terrible, and so on and so forth. And that's pretty much the only thing that I would read from novelizations. And so far as stuff that I'm reading / have read, I'm actually in the middle of a bunch of Poe's short stories, and I just finished both a lecture series, this is on Audible, for Big History, which is, you know, looking at the macro scale of history from Big Bang forward into the future of, you know, everything.
Yeah.
And then also Don Quixote, the entire original novel. So
are you reading that in Spanish or in English?
Actually, both. Okay. I just finished the English version, and I'm part of the way through the Spanish version. So.
Nice.
Legit.
Cool. Sure,
I guess I realized I completely skipped the first question. I'm sure there's been others. I think I've referenced a couple. The only one I can immediately think of, and it's probably somewhat obvious, is Dark Souls reminds me a lot of some of the Lovecraft stuff, and particularly some of his dream cycle stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like those, you know, everyone reads the Cthulhu mythos stuff, which is good, but I really like some of his dream cycle stuff. Yeah. And in terms of like books I would recommend, I really like Lloyd Alexander's Chronicles of it's a fantasy name, Prydain, Prydain, mm-hmm. whatever, which are, I mean, they're for kids, but they're some of my favorite books, so.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
So, I don't think I've read any video game literature, so I'm not knowledgeable on that at all. As far as what's on my reading list, I can say all the things that I'm reading that's within my eyesight right now, and I'll... I will go in clockwise order. There's the Wes Anderson collection, Grand Canyon National Park. I'm not going to read that. Accelerated C++, Go to Lesher Bach, A Short History of Nearly Everything by Bill Bryson, and Henderson Happenings, fall 2014.
What is Henderson Happenings?
It's a flyer, not a flyer. It's like a booklet of things to do in the local area.
Oh, a pamphlet. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. But it's like, it's meaty. It looks like a magazine almost. It's, yeah.
Nice.
Godel Escherbach, how do you like that? That comes like crazy well, highly recommended within the computer science community.
It's an amazing book. It's one of the most challenging books that I've read. As far as like, you know, like how House of Leaves, like you really need to take your time with that sort of book. Mm-hmm. Godel Escherbach's like that. Mm-hmm. So it's very meaty. It's good. Can I give away a part of the book as an endorsement for the book?
Yes, you may.
There's a chapter in which they talk about the idea of how one of the problems with a book is because of the physicality of it, you know where the ending is, is that it's going to be at the end of the book. And so they suggest an idea to end a book in the middle of the book, so that, you know, like the reader doesn't know it's coming up, but then to not let the reader know where the ending is to make it more interesting, you just make the rest of the book seem like the original book, but it's not really the original book. And so then it challenges the reader to try and find the ending of the book in the book.
I feel like we've talked about this. I feel like it's come up.
Yeah, I actually remember hearing about it at some point. Yeah. So yeah, you did talk about it sometime.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I've probably gushed about it before. It's a great book.
Yeah, that's
a good idea.
Yeah, no, that's that's one that, again, I've also heard about, that is similar in vein to House of Leaves. So I will have to plop that one into my reading list.
Wait. Are you saying you have a book backlog?
Yes, I do.
I have a book backlog shelf, actually a couple of shelves. Yeah. So I'm with Cole on that.
I'm better about that with books. Like, I only have a handful of books that I own that I haven't read, and most of that is, you know, has to do with me getting bored with one and starting another book and not finishing either of them. But I do have a list of, like, somebody says, "Hey, you should read blank," and I just plop that into a project in OmniFocus, and then the second that I'm looking for another book to order on Amazon or something like that, I just grab it.
Well, so, one of the big things I kind of agonize over is a lot of the books I want to read aren't English, mm-hmm. and so like deciding what translation to read really kills me.
Mm. Though the language you know, probably.
Well, I meant which translator.
Okay, cool. Sorry.
To be fair about my list of books, there are a large portion of them are all related to art. I read a lot of nonfiction and a lot of stuff related to things that I do. Mm-hmm. And for my birthday this year, everybody and their mother, literally everybody's mother, they all bought me books about art. So I have a huge shelf full of like 20 some odd books to go through. And now, to be fair, I burn through them very fast when I get to them, but...
Oh. Yeah. So I'll go ahead and do mine real quick. This is going to be the last question that we do. I'm going to save the rest for maybe next week. If you have any questions that you'd like to, let's throw them into this thread. And yeah, unless something else comes up, I want to save these and hit them later. But I recognize that we are operating under a little bit of a time crunch today. Yeah. So I will say, in terms of game novelizations, the Myst books are actually pretty good. Like they're really neat supernatural young adult novel. Kind of things. Mm-hmm. They give really good kind of backstory to the series, and look at kind of some of the weirder stuff they get into later on in the series, like with Denis and Uru and stuff like that, except through a different lens. That's a little bit more scrutable, and kind of builds the world out in a neat way. So there are like three of them. It's a trilogy. You can buy them like on Amazon, like all together for like $10 or whatever. But you could do a lot worse, especially if you really like that series a lot. Currently, I'm a little bit ashamed that I don't really have a new novel going. I'm rereading The Shining, just because that's a really good book, and I like that a lot, alongside Stephen King's Dance Macabre, which is his kind of nonfiction treatise on the horror genre in general. So I'm reading that just kind of, you know, to mine for thoughts for Hex Crank as a blog and as a writing project. And that's been kind of, I've just been chewing on that for a little while. I've been reading more comics, I guess, recently. So, like, just yesterday I read Volume 3 of Saga, which is an amazing series that I recommend anybody jumps into. It is, like, one of the best comics I've ever read. It's a nice mixture of, like, fantasy and sci-fi. And don't let either of those screw you up, because it's really, like, edgy. And don't let edginess screw you up either. But there's some really... great topics that they look over in that, and it's pretty neat.
What you're trying to say is it's kind of got a wider appeal than what you're trying to describe it as.
Yeah, like the premise that I heard, so this is Brian K. Vaughan, the guy who did Why the Last Man. Like, this is a project that he's doing with Fiona Staples, with kind of the key thesis of how can we make a comic book that could never be filmed? Yeah. So
and how do you make that?
You just make it as like balls to the wall nuts in terms of setting and premise as you can.
So while still being accessible. This is someone who doesn't know that CGI is the thing.
You know, it's. I think he's pulling it off.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I was just gonna say some of the stuff that shows up in Saga is pretty whacked out, and yeah, I don't know if that would make it to film.
Yeah, like the gigantic planet eating ogre whose balls are hanging out.
When you said balls to the wall, that was my visual.
Yeah, but like at its heart, it's like a love story. It's got these it's about this conflict between these two races, one of which is like bug winged people. They're humanoid, but they have, you know, like butterfly wings, and the other is a series of horned, like they've got like goat horns, and like basically this entire section of the galaxy is, you know, centered around this huge war between them, because like one of them lives on the moon, the other one lives on a planet, and like everybody's chosen sides. And this dude and this lady from each race get together and have a baby, and it's them running from the wall. It's really, really good.
Running from basically everybody.
And also Walking Dead. In terms of recommendations, like just because we're doing that. The Snow Leopard by Peter Matheson is really good. Peter Matheson just recently passed away, And that is a really great like journal of a trip to the Himalayas. That is a fantastic read. And then I Can Never Say Enough Good Things About On Writing by Stephen King.
Hmm.
Yeah. Cool. So thank you, everybody, for writing in with your questions. Really good crop this time. And if we did not get to you, do not fear. We'll be getting to you soon enough. Check out facebook.com/thelevelpodcast for that thread. And we'll be watching it.
The grind.
It's time for the grind where we talk about the games we've been playing. Does anybody want to volunteer to go first?
Pick me.
Go, do it.
Okay.
Seldom seen enthusiasm.
Well, here's the thing. I have two games that I don't think any of you guys have played, so that's cool. So, first one is Contrast, which is an indie game that was released November of last year, developed by Compulsion Games, published by Focus Home Interactive. You play the imaginary friend of a little girl, and this is set in the 1920s, and the mother works as a lounge singer in a cabaret, and she is basically modeled after Jessica Rabbit, but you only ever see her as a shadow figure, so she's not like a sex symbol for you. She's actually a fairly complex character in the story, although it's very noirish. It actually has like a family center to it, and you know, it's all focused on this little girl and her interactions with her family and things like that. But it's actually really neat. It's 3D and 2D at the same time. It's 3D in the overworld, but it's two-dimensional because you as an imaginary friend can actually jump into shadows and walk through shadows and do platforming stuff, and that's all two-dimensional.
Huh.
So you can pop in and out, and it's actually a really short game. It's got three acts to it. It takes maybe 3 or 4 hours total to play the whole thing. It's not terribly difficult. Like, it's a puzzle platformer, but the puzzles aren't super difficult and the platforming isn't super difficult. So it's a really relaxed kind of game to go through, but it's also extremely enjoyable. It's very atmospheric. It's got a really magical carnival kind of air to it. There's even a circus at one point, including like rides. And then it's got great music and a really neat visual style to it, because the only characters that appear as actual characters rather than shadows are the little girl and the imaginary friend. Hmm. So you see everything else as shadows on the wall. It's pretty neat.
So I think we actually did cover this at one point when it was like in development, because I remember the part where there's like the merry-go-round and you jump on like the shadows of that and you're like crossing across. Yeah.
Yeah, that's part of the platforming part.
But I have no idea when we talked about that. That could have been, you know, like 4 or 5 years ago. So
it would have been like sometime. Yeah, no, it would have been like last fall, like right around this time this was coming out. This was kind of like a launch title for the PS4, like the new generation. Yeah.
Yep. It was actually one of the free games for PSN when it first came out.
Yeah.
So, one of the other things I did want to mention is that the collectibles in the game, like, there's actually a really good reason for getting that, because it gives you so much of the back history and actually suggests a little bit more of the storyline before you actually uncover it during the game. Mm-hmm. So it's really neat. Overall, I really enjoyed playing it, and the soundtrack is awesome. And so,
yeah.
How much is it?
It's like $15 on Steam.
Yeah, I was gonna say something like $15. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this looks a lot snappier than I would expect a puzzle platformer of this description to be. Like, jumping into and out of shadow kind of seems to get you around the world pretty quick.
The ironic part about it is that the reason why I found out about this game is because I was on an art website that I'm on, and I saw a piece of fan art for the game and said, "What is this game?" And then because the fan art was interesting, it made me go look for the game. Mm-hmm. And it was just of the little girl and then Dawn, who is the character that you play, the imaginary friend. So
I feel like just from hearing it, like the imaginary friend that travels through shadows, that sounds terrifying.
Well, the thing is that you get more information about your character, Dawn, at the very end of the game, so I can't say anything more about it, but it's really neat. It's something I would highly recommend. It would actually, I know that Gary has it on his wish list, and I would definitely say that it should be something that, you know, some of you guys should try out, and, you know, maybe they can do it on Check It Out Comrade or something.
Yeah. I'm really curious about this. Have you ever played / heard of a game for the Wii called Lost in Shadow?
No, I have not. I do not have a Wii. I haven't played on a console in a very long time. I've been basically exclusively PC.
It's a very similar kind of idea. Like the story behind it is like a little boy's shadow, like he gets separated from his shadow. And so it's an entire platformer that takes place like on a shadow behind the wall as you're trying to get back to him. And it's very similar, like in that you have to manipulate the environment so that it creates a shadow that is favorable to you proceeding. It's not as good as the premise would lead you to believe. And I'm kind of curious if this kind of delivers on that promise. Because it's a good idea.
Yeah, I know that you have like the largest backlog in existence for games ever, but I would definitely recommend that you just buy it and just try it for like half an hour.
Yeah,
it's definitely awesome.
Yeah,
so
short ones will work better for me.
Yeah, it is short. It is short, and it's got three acts, and they're cut up in about the same length each one, and the max I think would be about an hour. I mean, I spent a little bit more time than that in the game, just exploring and looking intentionally and everything, but. And the other thing that I've been playing is Saturday Morning RPG, which came out this January. It was something that was kickstarted back in 2012, although I wasn't part of that, created by Mighty Rabbit Studios. They've only made two other games, one called Breach and Clear, and then another called Cylinder. And anyway, this game is basically take all the 80s cartoons from the mornings and just throw them together, and that plus like old Nintendo games, and throw it all together into a very highly active combat system RPG thing. Mm. And it's episodic. There's four episodes so far. They've got a preview as of the 12th of this month up on their site for the fifth episode that's coming out. This is another one where, you know, it's each episode is about the same length, and, you know, it's an hour, maybe an hour and a half for each episode. You only play the one main character, Marty, who's a dude who is, you know, watches Saturday morning cartoons, and he goes to sleep one night, and then in his dreams he meets this guy called the Wizard, who gives him a magical notebook that gives him powers, and all these powers are like, you get the Michael Jackson glove and you do the like moonwalker dance thing, and you know, that kind of thing, and you know, you can turn into a transformer, or I don't remember what they call it, like some kind of thing like that. But it's really kind of neat, and it just references all that stuff from the 80s. So 80s and early 90s.
I see him unleashing appears to be some kind of like summon spell, summoning a stampede of rainbow colored zebras a la fruit stripe gum.
Yes, fruit stripe gum. Yeah, yeah. That's one of the first things you start with is the fruit stripe gum.
Gum and awful tattoos.
Yeah. And the thing is that your notebook has scratch and sniff stickers on it that you actually get to scratch at the beginning of every fight that you go into to get bonuses. And then the cover you put on your basically trapper keeper changes the bonuses that you get in battle. And the battle system is kind of interesting because you only ever play the one guy. There's not a party or anything. And there isn't randomized battles or anything. They're actually showing up on the map, all the different bad guys you have to fight. And at the start of the battle, you do scratch and sniff stickers, and then you get to choose what you want to do. You can either basically punch them, charge and attack, or you can do one of your special moves, which you get to equip outside of combat. And the special moves, a lot of them are very interactive, where you have to do like button mashing or timing your button push just right and that kind of thing. And you can actually buy new power-ups and stuff from vending machines throughout the world. So
it sounds like Paper Mario to
me. Yeah, I was about to say that the combat system sounds very similar.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. Yeah. But it's a lot of fun. I've been having a lot of fun with it. Partially because some of the stuff that they reference, I'm just like, okay, that's awesome. I haven't seen that in a very long time. I mean, like your main bad guys basically look like, you know, G.I. Joe villains. So,
G.I. Joe.
So here's my question for you. And this might be me being a little bit of a crank.
That's like an 80s insult word, but go on.
leaning into the spirit. With the referential humor, do they bring any kind of art to it and try and take it apart, or is it something along the lines of, hey, do you remember that this existed?
Well, I've only played like one and a half of the episodes so far, so I haven't gotten through a whole lot of it. It's like, if you grew up watching any of this stuff, you will understand what's going on. But for me, I think part of the joy for me is just figuring out what all these different things do when I take them into battle. Say, for example, there you get a little purple bear with a rainbow on his stomach, and yes, you pick it up, and then you turn into a Care Bear, basically, and you shoot a rainbow out of your stomach. But, I mean, it's pretty much direct reference to the stuff that it's coming from, more than anything. So, I mean, it's just kind of like immersing itself back in that 80s and early 90s culture. And, you know, just mishmashing all of that together, kind of how we were talking earlier about Resident Evil 6 taking, like, the climax of every action movie from the 80s and 90s and just throwing them together. Yeah, it's the same kind of thing, where this is just taking, you know, all the little tidbits that you grew up with and have any kind of fondness for.
Yeah.
So, what is the driving force? Like, what are you trying to do, or is there like a narrative, or kind of what drives the game forward?
Well, each of the episodes has its own storyline, and they're written apparently by different people. And so the first one, you are basically trying to save this girl who is, you know, your love that you are unable to confess your love to. And Commander Hood has kidnapped her and wants to marry her. And you're like, no, I have to go rescue her. And then in the second one, Commander Hood has taken over your school. All of your teachers are now commandos. And he has a death laser. And you have to stop the death laser. So it's like set in your school. And then there's a death laser. And then all of your teachers are commandos. And you have to fight them. So, you know,
this is not Dr. Horrible sing-along blog, right?
Right? All right.
As an engineer, I can say that death lasers are the worst type of laser.
That's just prejudice.
It's a lot of fun. It's not something that I would say, you know, is going to be super captivating for every audience, but it's a fun, relaxing, silly thing to play off and on. I definitely recommend Contrast way more than I do Saturday Morning RPG, but if it's on a sale, you know, you can pick it up on iOS or, you know, PC or whatever.
Yeah.
I think it's on Mac too.
That's a pretty indicative title. Like, that's in terms of titles, it tells you exactly what you're getting. So I enjoy that.
It's pretty face value, but it's actually, it plays well enough that it's not boring. It's got enough to it to keep me active and interested in what's going on, so I don't get bored. So
yeah, if the game's there, that's what counts. Like, and that battle system sounds boss.
Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised because I half figured it was going to be JRPG rip and then I'd be really bored really fast, but that hasn't happened.
Let's hear Ben. I want to hear what you have to say.
Okay, so I have one small one and one medium-sized one. The small one is I saw one of my coworkers play through Portal 2 for the first time, and not all of it, but part of it. And that just reminded me of how great that game is.
So how many people have you watched play through Portal 2, Ben?
A lot, man. It's been a lot. It was like a revolving door when I was in college as far as people coming in and playing that game. But I'm totally fine with that because it's a great game. Yeah. But it is a really fun game to watch somebody play because you already know the answer and stuff. So it's like fun to watch the process of them figuring out what the answer is. But like, if only, like, the education system could work the way Portal works, you know? Like, it's so flawless, you know? Like, it gives you everything you need, and it gives you plenty of time to figure it out, and it gives you a nice soundtrack to listen to while you're figuring it out.
Common Core as created by GLaDOS.
So that was a lot of fun. We only got maybe... We didn't even get to, like, the first... major mile marker of the game, so I only saw a little bit of it, but it was still a lot of fun. I'm just going to take us a little bit deeper
into that real quick. Have you noticed any commonalities, like watching people approach it for the first time? It's been 3 years since I've even thought about that game, so, I'm curious.
The thing that's amazing about it is, and this is something I noticed with watching somebody else play it, is like anybody can play this game. Like anybody can pick up the controller and figure out how to play this game. It does not require you to be able to like headshot people at all. Like nothing like that at all. Like you don't even need to be terribly coordinated. Like it's so I like how open the game is to like anybody to want to play. And the thing that was cool for me is like I had forgotten just like the world of Portal, just like the small things like jumping, you know, like figuring out all the different things you can do with that one gimmick, you know, like so putting one on the floor and one on the side of a wall and just experimenting with that, or like putting two on opposite sides of a wall and just running infinitely, you know. So it was just cool to see somebody experience that entire world for the first time too.
Because
I don't think he had played the first one, but so that was a lot of fun.
I think they really upped the accessibility even compared to the first one, because the first one had a fair number of, like throw yourself off a wall and then catch yourself while you're flying and, you know, hit another wall and stuff. That actually took a fair degree of coordination, and it seems like that was kind of downplayed into.
They did build you up to that point, though, you know, like they... Like, they give you a small task and make sure that you master that, and then they make it a little bit more complicated and see if you can master that.
That's true.
And then, they, you know.
It feels like, from what I remember, in 2, they rely a lot less on the momentum conservation.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, yeah.
Like, just kind of the last minute just in time. Like, my recollection is that Portal 2 has you rely a lot more on, like, planning your shots than actually trying to, like, twitch execute them, which in a way makes it more accessible.
It seems like Portal with toys, you know, because it's more whatever the thing you're using focused, you know. Whether lasers or platforms or light bridges.
I really need to go beat that again, or actually beat it for the first time.
Haven't beat Portal 2?
Yeah, I feel like the game is much longer than it needed to be.
It's pretty long. It's like, what, 12 hours?
Yeah, and my big thing, I like the game. I'm predominantly in it for the story, and I got tired of literally everything requiring a puzzle.
Every stage?
Well, yeah, like, I got tired of not so much, like, the actual test chambers or some of the interesting story things, but where it was, like, just in between... like actual story elements where it's like you need to walk through this door, but oh no, the electricity's off. Like that got really old to me. It's like some of those, it's just like, just let me walk through the fucking door.
It sags a bit in the second act, I think.
I'm much later in the game where things get weird. You take a trip down memory lane, you come back, and then the kind of shoddy tests, I'm like partway through the shoddy tests.
Okay.
I actually have a pretty funny memory about Portal 2. I played that, the co-op mode, because I play co-op everything. I played that through with my best friend Nolan, and when we were doing so... he's very, very methodical and very dogged about finding out the answer to whatever it is, right? And I will reach. Yeah, he is. He's a computer engineer person. So, anyway, meanwhile, after a certain point, my brain shuts off and I go wee, and so here's me like flying through portals, jumping wherever, and just like doing whatever I can just to distract myself or just, you know, find something interesting to do. And he's just sitting there pondering very seriously how to make this thing work, and I'm just kind of, you know, derping around until he figures it out because I gave up. And so that was actually pretty fun to just play with him because we are so completely opposite in wavelengths. Artist and engineer. I mean, what can I say? That's a great matchup for any game.
I don't know. It kind of seems like you'd have your bases covered for some of the puzzles.
Right?
Yeah.
There were some that I figured out a lot faster than him, but the ones that, you know, he did better at, I was just like, okay, I give up. Yeah. Have fun with that.
That does seem to be one thing that's kind of underappreciated in games is, like, the art in games, you know, because video games are very much, like, an equal split between, like, programming and art, you know, but it seems like, well, I don't know how people perceive games, but it seems like, to me at least, like, the art's kind of underrepresented, but I don't know, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, moving on, my second game, since Portal is, you know, a four-year-old game or whatever, my second game is Watch Dogs, which I'm still going through. Basically having to put a lot of blinders up as I play it, which is fine, but it's some cracks are being seen, I guess. Like, the story is super flat, which is whatever, you just ignore it and keep playing. I've kind of explored most of what I needed to explore, so I've kind of done all the sort of side missions that they have, or like all the different ways that you can interact with the world. So I don't know if I mentioned this last week or not, but there's like chess puzzles, there's different races, there's different online modes that are kind of interesting, where you invade somebody else's world and try and like you try and hack another person, mm-hmm. whatever that means, but basically hide from them for like, you know, 2 minutes time while they try and find you.
Yeah.
So that can be pretty fun and pretty interesting.
Like, it combines Dark Souls and the multiplayer from Assassin's Creed in a really crazy way.
Yeah, I'll share my one story that I really liked about this. So, yes, yeah, so the idea is you're either trying to hide from a person or sort of blend in. So it's kind of like it can kind of be like a spy party a little bit. Mm-hmm. But so the way I went about it is I drove up in a car as if I were a computer, like at normal speed. And like the person who I was trying to hack or whatever had already like done stuff in the roadway. So cars were stopped. So I just pulled up behind the next stop car and started like hacking him. And so it was pretty fun to watch him like run around for 2 minutes to try and figure out like where I was, because I was completely in plain sight, you know, like he ran by me all, you know, but so that was very satisfying. And then he found me eventually, and so I had to like book it out of there, but it was nice because I was already in a car, so I could do that. But yeah, so there were some satisfying moments with that. Yeah, I did the coal sound quite quickly, but yeah.
So when you win, does it like reveal you or in any way like do like the oh this is where I was type of thing?
It does, yeah. So it does show you where the person was if you cannot find them, if you have been invaded.
Call it the dummy cam.
Yeah Which is nice, yeah, because it's cool to see how they outfox you if they did. Mm-hmm. So one person hid from me in hedges and I could not see a person there, so mm-hmm. yeah nice. So it's been fun. I'm in Act 2 of 5, so I'm still not even halfway through, but yeah. The story's kind of paper thin. Like, the characters are pretty flat so far, so that is what it is.
Yeah. I'm roughly where you're at, like, and it's just gotten interesting in terms of, like, actual stakes being assigned. Mm-hmm. And the one villain with like Desmond or whatever his name is, like your old former partner guy who's mm-hmm. a little bit deranged, I kind of like him. Okay. A little bit, but you're right, like in general the writing is not as interesting as just the world, I guess.
Yeah. And so I brought this point up to somebody at my work too, is the fact that like you start to figure out that the map is not an accurate representation of Chicago at all.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of a bummer, because yeah, that's one thing that kind of Grand Theft Auto kind of spoils you on, is that like every sort of location you'd want to see in that city is there, even if the city's not 100% accurate. But in this game, it's not exactly the case. Yeah. So
like, there's some crazy stuff. Like, you can't even go to Soldier Field. Like, Shea Stadium's there, but Soldier Field is not.
Yeah, I actually read an article on this. Apparently, a lot of that stuff just came down to, like, who would allow them to do it.
I had read one article on Reddit that was talking about how rushed the development of it was, so much to the point that the like the L, the train has right angles to it as far as the tracks go, you know, or like the, you know, the, yeah. So I understand that's probably an issue of timing and that they were kind of forced to ship it out half done. Yeah. But that's kind of a bummer.
Well, then what so they need I've... to do.
Go on.
Well, I was just going to say, what they need to do in that case is just rename the city.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's the problem is, like, it's bad. You know, at least Grand Theft Auto, you know, like, they have a plausible deniability because it's, like, Liberty City. So, you know, it's not New York, you know, or whatever. So
what I will say, I have very limited experience with Chicago, but what's great about it is it feels like a Midwestern city. Like you know, just that combination of, like, weird mixtures of developments and just kind of, like, neighborhoods that ought not to be next to each other, you know, being next to each other and kind of that more suburban feel. Like, it feels like it captures, you know, a little bit of what makes that feel like a Midwestern city. That and, you know, the accents are pretty good on the voice acting.
Yeah. I guess my problem with it is, like, I was able to run from downtown Chicago to the suburbs in, like, 2 minutes time in the video game. Mm. That's not plausible. And, like, I don't know. There's a lot of, like, neighborhoods in Chicago that are kind of cut out.
Yeah.
So, like, Lincoln Park and even Wrigleyville's not. Yeah, it's not really there, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, it basically goes as north as, like, the Hancock Building, and then there are bridges that lead you to suburbs, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know if it's the representation of Gary, Indiana or not, but basically, like, kind of slums . So.
So a lot of the things I've read have kind of positioned this as being similar to the original Assassin's Creed, in which, you know, it was an awesome idea with a lot of potential, but maybe not that great of a game. With the idea being that then, like, hopefully, like Assassin's Creed, you know, the second one will be amazing. Do you kind of agree with that assessment? Does it feel like that sort of, like, we've got a great idea, but don't quite know how to implement it yet?
I mean, I will say that it's certainly fun. Like, I will probably play through to the end of this game because it's not like it's just kind of the worst of both worlds because it's not accurate like Grand Theft Auto and it's not completely fun like Saints Row, but it's kind of somewhere in the middle. But it's definitely serviceable though. So, I mean, you can play it and kind of enjoy it, but, like, you'll have things like if you're on a motorcycle and you run into a car going 60 miles per hour and you won't fall off, you know, and it's kind of like, I don't know.
Even Saints Row did that.
yeah. So, I mean, there's just kind of some weird things, and it's like, I can understand that it's like, oh, okay, well, it's easier for me not to fly off that, and it's kind of more fun in a sense for me to just keep going, but I don't know. It's kind of in this weird limbo state where it's, like, not a fully formed idea. So...
yeah.
So it's not bad. I'll play it to the end. I mean, it has some meat to it as far as, like, the amount of things you can do within the world and the amount of things you can explore. But yeah, I would say that it's very much like it's similar to Tomb Raider in that it's like it's a great start for a game and they could probably do cooler things with it. But it itself is not terribly great.
Yeah. Yeah, I would really like to continue playing it. However, it's crashing every time I load a new area.
Oh.
And so that's something I did tonight was uninstall it and then reinstall it. And hopefully the file I backed up was my save file. otherwise, this is going in the memory hole of games I won't go back to because fuck playing a part of a game twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. PC gaming. Yeah. Anything else, bud?
That's all.
Yeah. David, how about you?
Sure. Well, first, real quick, I started up Dark Souls again on Cole's suggestion. So I killed Havel and took his ring. Basically, the secret to that fight was ignoring all of the advice on the internet and just blocking his attacks.
Which one is Havel?
Havel is right near the Taurus demon. However, if you don't have the lockpick master key, you can't actually get to him until much later in the game. But normally speaking, his big thing is just he does an insane amount of damage, so it's basically a one-hit kill.
Yeah.
But for most people, you can't block his attack, so everyone recommends you dodge him. However, blocking's pretty much what I built my character around, so I could actually block his attacks fairly easily.
Yeah. He's a high-value target because his ring lets you equip more without losing speed on your roll.
Right.
The traditional strategy people recommend is to strip naked and just dodge all of his attacks because you won't be able to soak any of the damage that he does.
Sure. And the difficulty I had is I've only put points in endurance and like one or two in vitality, so I do almost no damage. So it was a thing where I had to dodge correctly so many times that just wasn't realistic. Especially since I can't equip any like high damage equipment because I don't have the strength.
You really ought to like pick a damage stat and go for it, because otherwise you're going to have nothing but trouble on some of the later bosses.
See, that's the issue I've found is like Seriously,
just pick a weapon and stat for it.
See, what I can't figure out is there any tie-in between like armor and like whether you use a shield and dodge and which weapon you go with. Like, could I be a dex build that uses heavy armor,
yeah,
or a strength build that dodges?
Yeah, there's nothing that stops you from doing that because your equipment is tied to your endurance. So if your endurance is high up, then your equipment load is really high too. So you can be, you know, heavy armor dex guy if you want. Like that, like that's not going to stop you. Strength just deals with certain weapons.
Sure, because right now my basic gameplay style has been to mostly rely on distancing and like strafing to avoid damage, and then secondarily blocking.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wearing the Elite Knight's armor.
Yeah.
And I've been using either the Balder Side Sword or the Winged Spear.
Another person who has the Balder Side Sword that I don't have.
Yeah, I farmed for a significant period of time.
Yeah.
So I should probably do that. Is there a recommended, like, when to start putting points in damage stats and how much?
Always. I mean, if you're looking for a heuristic, it should probably be, like, one in your damage stat and then one into endurance. Like, you can't go wrong that way.
Okay.
Either that or vitality. Like, you know, doing that kind of alternation will be
sure. Because my goal was to just get to one of the, like, lightning or fire weapons that don't scale versus stats.
No. That's not for a little while, though. You're going to want to be able to equip something that'll do actual damage.
Okay. Well, yeah. I might take some time and do that, because then in the depths, I've offed the giant rat and the Chandler, but mm-hmm. I'm having some annoyance with the gaping demon. In particular, I can't hit his tail because both of my weapons are piercing weapons, and the tail is above you most of the time.
Yeah.
So
yeah, at that point you want to find another kind of weapon that'll do the kind of attack you want to.
Yeah, so I know I tried that some and just ended up getting annoying. I don't think the boss is going to be that hard to actually beat, and I might, since I'm not going to use a giant axe, I might just cut my losses and either just snipe him or, you know, abuse distancing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I really like that they take a very Dark Souls twist on the sewer alligator thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah. So like you've been in the depths for about 2 years now, haven't you?
Yeah, because I despised that area and stopped playing.
the only way out is through, Doc.
Maybe. So yeah. We'll see. You know, the other option is technically I have the master key. I don't have to beat the depths.
No, it'll just put you on the wrong side of Blighttown.
Yeah, I went in while I was level one and messed around in Blighttown some and nearly defeated the initial ogre things you fight. But
yeah,
so
yeah, what else have you been playing?
One of the big things actually is I've been playing with Jala, Resident Evil, six. So we beat Jake and Sherry's campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably my favorite so far. I really enjoy the bike chase scene, mainly because I'm somehow good at it. Which makes no sense, because I'm normally horrible at driving and horrible at, like, reaction time things.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I really, really like the ending. I don't know, is it spoiler to kind of discuss the mechanics of how you beat the final boss? Like,
of which campaign?
Of Jake's.
I forget it, so I can't say. Like, I think it's fine as long as you don't, like, say the narrative implications, but...
Sure. Just the facts that you finally get to the final boss and decide to go straight up fisticuffs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was one of those things, like, I feel like it probably sucks for whoever's playing Sherry, but I felt like it worked. Like, I felt like it kind of matched where the campaign was going and, like, seemed in sort of a demented way character appropriate, and that's also how I try to play every character in every game I play anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. I think it's hilarious how the nemesis figure that's kind of chasing you around the world, you don't actually, like, Sherry and Jake don't get to take that out. That's Leon and Carla who do that.
Well, ultimately you take it out.
Really?
Yeah, it's Sherry and Jake.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's who you're fist fighting. That's part of what's funny about it, is that, like, you literally, like, collapse buildings on top of it, shoot it with rockets, like, I mean, just tons and tons of stuff, and then the way you finally defeat it is fist fighting it.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like a Nemesis, spoilers for a 20-year-old game.
I will take my headset off now, then.
Excuse me, sir. I don't know why I made you sound like a fancy boy, but a fancy lad, rather.
Because I'm an elitist.
Except, yes. Oh, yes, the spoilers. What is the vintage on the spoiler, Mr. Ross? No, like, you fire, like, rail guns at Nemesis and shit, and you push them into trash compactors, like, you run them through hell, and the thing that kills him in the end, I mean, aside from the nuke that takes out Raccoon City, is Jill shooting him with a magnum that you have been shooting him with throughout the entire game.
Well, that's actually, you don't beat him with the fisticuffs, though. It's actually,
it's something different.
Yeah, it's something different.
Yeah, I was expecting him to do the Schwarzenegger thumbs up. Is that spoilery? So, it does. I don't know if Nemesis is the same way. I felt like they a little bit didn't sufficiently explain, like, how this creature crossed an entire continent and apparently, like, teleported onto your airplane.
Mm.
Like, I feel like they kind of stretch the degree of it, like, it coming back. Like, I can understand to a certain degree doing the Friday the 13th, like, indestructible enemy, but having him literally go from Eastern Europe to Southeast Asia seems a little questionable.
Well, at the same time, David, you still have to finish playing the rest of Chris's campaign. If we want to talk about things that are surreal and don't make any sense.
Sure, and so I guess that's the next thing, is we've started Chris's campaign, which I think should be referred to as, like, Call of Duty Zombie Ops, or, like, CODs Ops. So, like I said, like, I really enjoy that take on the Resident Evil lore, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
So far, I stand by my, I think this was the best campaign to play last, because so far it seems like it's very much kind of tying together a lot of the other stories. A couple of weird things. Like, Pierce is definitely 15 and models his hair off of Justin Bieber. And there's definitely a hardcore bromance going down there.
Yeah.
Like, just the fact that, like, anytime anyone, like, says anything to Chris, he's ready to throw down.
Pierce is my beautiful flower.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, he's like that about everything. Jake's like, you BSAA people, I'm a mercenary. And then he's like, what? What you say? Like, he just wants to beat everybody up.
My unit!
Well, the thing is, the funny part about it is that Pierce ends up being the cool-headed one later on in the game, but at first, he's the hothead. So...
The other thing I wondered, and you know, I'm not an expert, but like, is like widespread like existential amnesia really a symptom of PTSD? Like, I realize it's a symptom of being in a Final Fantasy game, but it struck me as a little bit like odd to have the character just like completely forget he was in the BSSA. A or that Raccoon City ever happened. But
well, he also sports a pimp chain in the first part, so I'm like in the little cutscene in the beginning, he's totally got the big gold chain going on, so that's kind of out of character too. So, you know, he just kind of stepped into his own little world for a while, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think the take home is there's some weird things about this campaign, but like the rest of the game, it continues to be very likable.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're going to have to replay part of it, though, because there is a part, I don't remember if it's in the first or the second chapter, but there's a part where there is a slide, and Pierce can slide down the slide on his belly. It's like the most random little Easter egg thing ever, and, you know, like, it's just really weird, and yeah.
Yeah, I'm down with that. I'm down with any time you can throw a playground into a game and it works like in Half-Life 2.
Something that did strike me as odd narratively is, aren't Chris and Leon supposed to know each other?
Yeah, they
do. So apparently, despite this being like the sole obsession of Leon's life, Leon apparently never mentioned Ada, which seems like something that would come up.
Well, he's trying to protect her because she's a spy.
Yeah.
Still, I feel like, hey, how I survived all this stuff, plus this chick I'm irrationally obsessed with, I feel like that's something you would would come up at some point.
Yeah.
Well, Leon and Chris aren't having a bromance. So
no.
they don't swap stories and stuff over a beer.
They don't share secret times.
I guess one other thing I've noticed is, you know, we're talking Sherry's little thing with like being helped by everyone. Apparently Jake and Sherry in general have a thing with just getting captured every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Which again is a little unusual but kind of funny. So.
Well, their whole campaign, the thing that's interesting is that all the different campaigns play differently, and the thing about that campaign is that it's all about running away, sneaking around, etc., you know, whereas Chris, it's all Call of Duty, and then Leon is kind of like a callback to Resi 4 and then earlier Resi games, so.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yep, so you're, like, how far are you from the end on it? Like, did you just get started on Chris's campaign, or...?
We finished the second chapter.
Yeah, yeah. And are you guys going to do Ada's after everything's said and done?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see, apparently Ada's campaign is not explicitly co-op.
You just have like a random umbrella mook with you.
What I like to call him is Jiminy Cricket. He's like Ada's conscience because he's not there in any of the cutscenes. He just kind of like, you know, he can't actually manipulate anything in the world either. Yeah. Only Ada can. So he's just kind of there to be a body.
Yeah. And he jumps into and out of the shadows.
Well, and then too, you also have the fact that Ada's like talking to herself the entire time or to her conscience. Mm-hmm. So
basically what we're saying is she's losing it.
I was never in question. she goes through some shit. Yeah. Anything else, David?
We're running low on time. At some point, I need to talk about Sunless Sea because it's been like a month, but we keep running out of time. So
yeah. Yep.
Start with it.
Yeah. there we go.
Good, that would be too logical.
Good pod strats.
Yeah. What you been playing, Cole?
Yeah. So I wrapped up Shovel Knight. And that is a really good game that I recommend everybody who is able to
would
play.
You say, sorry.
I buried it, I guess. I don't know.
Okay, that's what I was about to say.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, I mean.
You cut me off on that one, Cole.
Except for that pause in the middle of your sentence. Were you just letting me jump on that grenade there?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
I've got your back.
It stays really good. It's phenomenal how consistent the level of quality is throughout it. And just kind of how varied the different levels are, in a way that like even the best Mega Man game doesn't feel like it leans into enough. So it doesn't stop throwing kind of new stuff at you, which is really good. And the bosses, dude, like the bosses are fantastic. So much so that they throw a boss rush at you towards the end in like a real Mega Man fashion, and it's not like a ugh. Because normally boss rushes are just the pits, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a delight to kind of go after them all again, especially some of the earlier ones with later abilities that you get that kind of bring a little bit of a new dimension to that fight.
So I know it's kind of based on the Nintendo era games. How Nintendo hard does it get?
It gets pretty hard. I would say it never feels like unfair.
Okay.
Which is something that when people invoke Nintendo hard, that's a little bit what comes to mind, is like, oh, this was just poorly balanced, or they didn't take into account that this might be functionally impossible, or they wanted to pad the length. That isn't the case. And I think that's just by virtue of the checkpoint system, which continues being really useful. I never got bold enough to destroy one myself. However, knowing that that was an option kind of always felt good in a weird way, even though I never did it. Just saying like, oh, okay, if I felt confident about my ability to go through all this, I could take this risk, but I don't. But all that says is that it is consistently kind of like pushing me to the edge of what I feel like I can do, whether that's platforming or whether that's, fighting enemies that are kind of laid out in creative ways.
I can destroy this checkpoint anytime I want. I just don't want to.
Exactly. Yeah. What I will say is, like, in a weird way, the difficulty kind of goes down as you go along because money ceases being useful because you buy everything that you otherwise would have bought. Like, you know, there's only a certain number of things in the game, but money continues to flow in. The fear that you have, about losing money kind of, like, goes away. So if you want to take a risk on a jump, it's not that big of a deal that you lose a certain amount of your money. And there's no limit on the lives that you have in a certain level. So that is something that kind of like offsets some of the trickier platforming that you're going to have to do because, at least for me, I ceased giving a fuck if I lived or died. So, that at least I had that going for me. But like the last series of bosses was really intense.
I am really looking forward to playing that game after Saturday Morning RPG.
Yeah, now it's it is like just stupidly good. Yeah. Any other questions about that? I've got a couple to go through here, but they're all pretty quick.
I don't have any questions, but I wish I did. But yeah, sorry.
Lots of thought that counts.
I don't want to make it sound like I'm not interested in the game. I just
I just summed it up so well. I captured the essence. Oh, that is totally not the case. I played a little bit of, in fact, when I say I played a little bit, I mean I played several times, a game called The Yogg.
Oh, is that the weird choice game?
Yeah. So it's like the best parts of Oregon Trail. It's spelled Y-A-W-H-G.
Okay.
And so it's a really neat premise around it, which is like, it is, what if you had maybe like 15 minutes to just play through this entire scenario? And you have multiple characters. So the idea is that there's this thing called the Yogg that's about to show up in 6 weeks. You have no idea what the Yogg is, and I won't spoil what the Yogg is. But the idea is it's going to destroy this town. And you are playing as anywhere between 2 and 4 characters who are inhabitants of this town. And each week is a round for you to play, and there are different places you can go. So you can take one character to the palace, right? And you have a choice when you go to the palace to either do administrative work or party down at like some balls and galas. And each thing that you do either tests or contributes to or alters your stats. So the idea is over the course of this 6 weeks, you're doing different things that will set you up to when the Yogg shows up. Those abilities are going to be tested in whether or not you can save and rebuild the town. Okay.
Right.
So it plays out like, you know, like each round takes about like 15 minutes or so, at least in my plays through. And each little activity that you can do has like a little choice associated with it. So it's like if you go to the palace ball, there'll be somebody who says, "Oh no, there's a bomb," and you can decide, I'm either going to escape with everybody else or try and defuse it. Right. And so if you're trying to fuse it, you'd better hope that your mind and body stats are high enough. Otherwise, you will fail at doing so and not escape in time and lose like some of your physical stat, like your health, because you're blown through a wall. And each of these things is kind of like illustrated in a really cool way. The closest thing that I can think of is like a very like loose cartoon hand-drawn version of like maybe a colored in Hark of Vagrant. Or the art that goes alongside Johann Sebastian Joust.
Right. Yeah.
It's like really charming. Like all the text is handwritten out. The music is really neat. Like, and so they just kind of created different assets for all these characters running through these scenarios, which are like, you know, just really cute. Like one of them is, okay, you go to the alchemy tower and you mix up some potions, but they throw an impromptu like cantrip contest. Or demonstration, like to cast little spells. And so it's like, do I want to cast a simple spell or a complex spell? And like you cast a complex spell. If you fail that check, it gives you a little graphic and it gives you like a verbal description, like, oh no, you made it so you can't stop breathing fire and you light everybody's clothes on fire. And it's a huge embarrassment. You lose X magic and X charm. And it's just like a bunch of these little like random events that you just kind of like run through, hoping that at the end you are able to pass through this. Like it's, you know, go to the slums and either be a pickpocket or fight crime. And as you're fighting crime, it's like, oh, there's somebody who, you know, is being beat up and you save them. It could either be the queen or it could be an evil magician who's going to like curse you or whatever. And so it's like those neat little choices. It's like if Oregon Trail was just rivers.
Oregon Trail, only stressful.
Yeah, by which I mean Amazon Trail.
So how dark is it? Because I know in the some of the trailers and stuff, the example they show with the bard is actually rather dark.
Yeah. Yeah, it can get pretty dark. I would say it is somewhere between like Adventure Time and something that is maybe 15% darker than Adventure Time.
So like the darker episodes of Adventure Time.
Yeah, yeah. Like when they get in some real serious shit. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like it deals with the occult and stuff. Like there's, you can go to the hospital. None of this is spoilers because the game's 15 minutes long. Like you go to the hospital and there's somebody who shows up with weird spiral shaped sores on them, and you try and help them, and they spit water on you and it gives you the sores, and it's like a vector for demonic possession. And the cool thing is, if that happens too late, when the Yogg comes, you will be given entirely over to this possession and you will actually hurt anybody else who is trying to work to recover from it. So like you can actually, like if different things happen at different times, it can diminish you in such a way that it causes you, like, you know, that character to lose the scenario.
Huh.
Yeah. it's really neat. It's meant to be played a bunch of times, and I've just kind of like over the course of the past week dipped in a little bit. I very highly recommend it.
It says that it's 1 to 4 players, so you can do this multiplayer.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can play like all 4 characters yourself, or if you want to pass it around with a bunch of people. I played it all by myself, which
you didn't make anybody rage quit the Yogg.
No.
You made some people actually join the Yogg. Yeah.
Side with the Yogg against me.
In under 15 minutes, because that's his time limit there.
Yeah. I'm really effective at pissing people off.
A new record, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's actually a really good idea. I might try bouncing it off as a people at work. Just run that as a team building exercise. Oh, man. So, yeah. Let's see here. I've been dipping into Alone in the Dark, but I'm going to save that for the Hexcrank article about it. I just want... What's that?
That was a gasp of shock. I think, like, the last episode of the level, you said, I'm never going to play that game ever. And what? So...
Alone in the Dark?
Yeah.
No, I never said that. I don't think I did. So if it sounded like I said it, like, out of disgust, like I refused to play it. No, it was more like, I'm never going to have time to. But I just ended up having a slow weekend. Yeah.
Okay. Wait,
so this is the new Alone in the Dark?
No, this is the original, and it's really cool. I like it a lot. I'm recording the entire playthrough. I hope to make some kind of video thing about it. But yeah.
So what year are you at right now in Hexcrank?
I'm doing real slow.
Okay. Yeah. It's chronological though, right?
Yep. Wait, I thought Alone in the Dark was supposed to be the first survival horror game.
As it's defined, it was a direct antecedent to Resident Evil, but you can make an argument that Sweet Home was the more direct influence on the first Resident Evil.
Okay.
Yeah.
When's the book coming out, Cole?
I don't know. I want to at least get through the 90s first. you joke about that, but I might do like an Amazon e-publish.
No, if you're literally doing all this work and you are actually writing up stuff about it, you should go ahead and publish it.
Yeah. I want to at least get through like 1995 before I consider that and see what it is. Like, it's bizarre because each article is like over 2,000 words. So, like, you do 25 of those, and that is a novel length, and that says more about my inability to edit myself than it does about the quality of what's inside of it. But the body of work is there, so I'd like to revisit it and see what it looks like compiled into a PDF. So, yeah, Jala, we're, like, on the same wavelength on that.
Don't worry about your inability to edit. You're the next Hideo Kojima.
I just need to get people afraid to say no to me. So Alone in the Dark's pretty cool. I also pulled out Rock Band because reasons, to make sure my equipment worked, and that is a lot of fun, although the pro guitar is very dissatisfying compared to Rocksmith, so I don't think I'll ever play pro guitar in Rock Band again.
Ooh.
But pro keys, it's funny how you just kind of fall back into that. Yeah, and that's all.
Awesome.
Cool. You guys want to button it up?
Not all at once.
That's enough for me.
The credit. I hold my breath every time you ask.
We're savoring the moment.
So that was level number 72. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. And Jala, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you for having me.
Where can people find you on the internet, Jala?
They can find me on my website at neonskystudio.com, or they can find me on Twitter at Jalachan, J-A-L-A-C-H-A-N.
Cool. Yeah. Recommend it. So what else can you do? It's been a little bit of a long episode, so I'm going to keep the admin nice and short. Check us out on Facebook. It is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. The Patreon is going strong. August is continuing the charge. Thank you, everybody, who has donated so far. If you're interested in getting early access to all of our network shows and also getting some little doodads and extras, such as like a backer blog with production details, go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Even a dollar a month really helps us out and helps us like meet those goals and stuff. That's a big one. iTunes, I'm going to stop saying perfunctory stuff and just say thank you so much for listening. And if you think to, tell a friend, because we want to make this party bigger and bigger. Yeah. So did I miss anything, guys? All right. So I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I continue to be David Meismith at Meismith777 on Twitter.
Jolly, you might as well, even though you already said it. Just for me, please. For me.
Okay. I'm Jolichon at Twitter.
Thank you.
Backwards.
She's at the entire website of Twitter.
That's right. All over it.
I'm Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Yeah. And until next time, don't rage quit the yog. So, do you want to know what else was in contention?
Yeah,
before sure. before I unilaterally chose that one, Pigeon Simulator, Turtles and Stuff, Mario is not a good is not that good of a game.
We gotta, that we would have just to cause that blame wars. Sure.
Yeah. I was leaning toward that one. However, it feels a little clickbaity. So.
Isn't that the best reason to do it? We need all the clicks.
Yeah, no.
Oh, no, it would end up being elitist.
you know, clickbaity, he's Warren's lesser-known brother. Got a lot less work. There we go. Let's get rolling.
Like Limp Bizkit.
Yes.
Preferably
and,
not.
Like exactly like Limp Bizkit.
I mean, you know, I assumed it was assumed, but you know, just to let the listener in case they didn't know.
You make my heart sad, Ben.
Rolling, rolling, rolling.